Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Throughout the human race, with each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come. For us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes to see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the sin screams louder than the finest ever dare. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairer if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina, on this, well, not so sunny, I guess, out the window right now, July 2nd, 2014, here Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, and 4 and 5 in between for Mountain and Central Time. There are tons of things to talk about today. To my great distress, the website I keep my website on, and websites, I have two websites, primary websites, and News information is not accessible at the moment, but I have tons of other things to talk to you about. I had some information come to me recently from a gentleman who shares information on the internet and talking about what some recent tests reveal, 2014 reference lab tests. Some of this information, I think, coming from naturalnews.com, looking at the mercury content in influenza shots. Now, let's start with a couple of basic reference points. The maximum mercury contaminant level allowed in drinking water set by the Environmental Protection Agency, the federal EPA, according to this information in front of me, is 2 parts per billion, 2 ppb. 2 parts per billion, the amount of mercury contaminant that's allowed in drinking water, set by the EPA. Now, the typical mercury level in tuna is considerably more than that. That's 250 parts per billion. Now, I want to underscore a point here. Just because mercury is in food that you eat doesn't necessarily mean your body is going to absorb all of that mercury. And there was some really fascinating information from Natural News, naturalnews.com. Mike Adams, the founder of naturalnews.com, the health ranger, he refers to himself. I think a very fitting title, by the way. And with something on the order, if I remember correctly, about $1 million worth of lab equipment, they've been doing extensive testing to see what foods will combine with what kinds of heavy metals and some other toxins, such that the food passes through your digestive system and the toxic ingredient is not absorbed into the body. So depending, it's one thing to say there's, as this information says, 250 parts per billion in mercury level in tuna, but it's a separate question to say how much of that gets absorbed by your body for whatever combination of reasons. But the research that they've done, Mike Adams in Natural News, looking at expensive lab equipment that simulates digestion so they can see how much mercury or other, they looked at many different contaminants in many different foods, how much of that is available to be absorbed through the intestinal wall, into the bloodstream, et cetera, and how much of it binds with what kind of food such that it passes through and is not absorbed by the body. So some fascinating research. So anyway, having that in mind, EPA limit for drinking water, 2 parts per billion. Typical mercury level in tuna, 250 parts per billion. 500 parts per billion is the highest level detected by Natural News in contaminated whitefish. So tuna is known for having high mercury levels, but maybe not the highest. Highest they found, 500 parts per billion in whitefish. Now, let's bring this all back around to vaccines. What's the level of mercury found in a flu shot? Drum roll, 51,000 parts per billion. Now, I want to point out that that's more than 25,000 times the EPA's limit for mercury in drinking water. Maximum allowable level of mercury in drinking water, according to the EPA, 2 parts per billion. What's in a flu vaccine? 51,000 parts per billion. Not even close, folks. We're talking orders of magnitude, orders plural, orders of magnitude apart here. Now, there's also something very different from drinking water that has mercury in it, where, again, it may or may not be absorbed. and then injecting that directly into your bloodstream with a vaccine. So at that point, there's no longer a question of, is it going to be absorbed into your body? It is in your body. The flu shot is not going to be passed on out through your solid waste. Now, different bodies have different capacities for eliminating mercury and other heavy metals and toxic ingredients. So it's very much ultimately a case-by-case basis, an individual thing, different with each person. But there are people who will say, experts who will say, that there's no safe level of mercury. I mean, I guess if the world has mercury in it, we can't get around that. It's emitted from a form of air pollution from coal burning or producing factories. It's ubiquitous to one degree or another. It's in the water, it's in the air, it's in the food, it's in the ground. So let's be realistic. It's very difficult to avoid absolutely mercury and probably hundreds of other contaminants here. So I suppose it's realistic for the EPA to come up with a maximum allowable amount, even though you really shouldn't have 2 parts per billion, which they say is their maximum content in drinking water. But 51,000 parts per billion in a flu shot, what are they trying to do? I mean, it looks to me like they're trying to introduce chronic disease so they can have a market for other pharmaceutical products later on to treat those the conditions that created. Now, whether they're doing that as an initial deliberate plan or not, I can't say. I wasn't in the room when they had that discussion, but clearly that's what's happening. And this is something that the people who manufacture the vaccines know, and the people at the CDC and other federal and state health agencies that set policy. So we have some severely dysfunctional people driving the system, or a severely dysfunctional system. And, you know, I have to mention this, I just saw an article. I didn't actually have time to read the article, saw the headlines, and that's really all I cared to see. Something to the effect of 161 or something, 160-something independent articles, research articles, prove vaccines are safe and effective. And I actually skimmed the first part of the article, and they said nothing in the article that I saw about independent research. They were talking about research, but not independent research. So I'm not even sure the title was accurate in that respect. But you don't need to read an article like that to see if you can figure out whether or not vaccines are really safe and effective, because you can go to the federal government's vaccine injury compensation website, and they post information on that website about the dollars they pay out each year for each vaccine. In fact, they have, I think, quarterly updates. And you can see that the federal government to date has paid out close to $3 billion, and it averages, I think, a little more than $100 million a year to vaccine victims or families where children or adults have been severely disabled or killed by vaccines, $100 million a year. Now, Any product that the government has to compensate people for to the tune of $100 million a year, I'm sorry, I don't care how many studies you have and how good they are not safe and effective. They kill and injure people all the time, frequently. It's not a question, it's not a debate, it's not a conspiracy theory, it's not a something somebody invented. You know, what is necessarily invented is anything that tries to contradict that. Because even the FDA and the CDC have told us that only 1 to 10% of the serious adverse events ever even get reported. Former FDA Commissioner David Kessler has gone on record saying less than 1% of serious drug reactions reported. With vaccines, there's federal law requiring doctors to report, but the NVIC did a survey of pediatricians in New York a few years ago, and only 2.5% of them said that they reported suspected adverse events from vaccines. So, you know, you can't count what isn't reported, but we have multiple sources. The American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, their position on the matter is probably 10%. So we have estimates from less than 1% ranging up to a high of 10%. So that $100 million a year probably represents somewhere between $1 billion and $10 billion worth of harm actually happening. And that's only for the roughly quarter of those who petition for compensation who actually end up getting any money. For any of a number of reasons, three-quarters of the folks who petition don't get any compensation at all. Does that mean that three-fourths of the people seeking compensation are lying and didn't really have a vaccine injury at all? Probably not. Probably means they didn't meet some proper legal standard for one reason or another. You know what? You talk to the attorneys that handle these cases, and they tell you that they get people calling them all the time who called too late. They missed the statute of limitations. Got a 3-year statute of limitations on an injury. I think on a death it's 2 years, 1 or 2 years. The federal government requires anyone administering a vaccine to a child to give information to the parent about the vaccine injury compensation program. But most people don't know about it. Is that because they're forgetting what the doctors tell them? I don't think so. I think doctors aren't handing out this information required by federal law. Is there a penalty for them, though? Nope. No penalty at all. You have to do this, but, you know, who cares? So that's what I call lip service from Congress, an attempt to look like you're doing something when you're really not. If there's no enforcement, then the law is, for all practical purposes, non-existent. It's like this idea about let's let GMO labeling be voluntary and we can count on the good faith of the food industry to label their food. You know what? The number of companies that have voluntarily put GMOs on their labels when they have products that have GMOs in them is an astounding, actually not at all surprising, 0% of companies. So that's what volunteer labeling does. Is anybody going to deliberately, voluntarily do something that makes them look bad? I don't think so. I don't think so. And you want to be a doctor and stay in the mainstream medical world and have your exorbitant income while people go broke trying to get your services and keep your reputation in clout, you do not question or challenge vaccines. Because the medical world is not about truth in medicine and science. It's about politics, doing things the right way. You shut up and you're told you get paid well, advancing your career, decide you want to go on a quest for truth, and you'll get booted out right away. Got a caller on the line here, area code 915. Caller, you're on the air.
Alan, this is Larry.
Larry, how you doing? I'm doing great. Terrific to hear from you.
If it got any better, I'd lose control of my senses and go dance out on the interstate, my friend. Hey, have you ever been on the Joyce Riley show?
I don't believe so. No, tell me more.
Brings on. All right, she's on GCN. You know, all that. Actually, her and Vincinelli would be a good outlet. But she has a lot of different people on, and she's very much against vaccines. She used to be a nurse. She was vaccine injured.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And, well, let me rephrase that. I have to say allegedly, because I don't know for a fact. I mean, she says that, and I believe her, but I'm not a witness to it, so I need to clarify that one. But anyway.
Sure. What's her name again?
Joyce Riley. I think her name, her show is Power Hour or something like that. She's on GCN.
Okay.
But that would be a really good outlet to reach a lot of people. I don't even know
Thank
if she
you,
knows Will. About you. I was going to call
yeah.
her and ask her. You know, it's like bring you two together, so to speak, meeting of the minds, because she gets people like, Deborah Tavares on, and my mind's drawing a blank right now. But anyway, a lot of good people on. She's had Dr. Wallach on, and I don't know some others. But, yeah, that would be a really good outreach, because I know she has a lot of listeners. I mean, literally all over the world, so to speak. Okay?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'll definitely follow up on that. I can see several reasons just based on a little bit you've said already. I've got another show that I invite people to come on and share their experience with a vaccine adverse event, and so I could invite her on that show as well.
Yeah. Well, see, now, she was a military nurse and then a civilian nurse, I believe, and did a march, I guess, back in the 90s against, you know, vaccines or something. At the Capitol in Washington, D.C. So, she's been around a while. She's
yeah.
not, you know, just somebody who was born yesterday, so to speak. But,
yeah.
I'm going to, if I can get on her show, I'm going to tell her, and what's your website? Because I always space it out.
Sure, vaccinerights.com.
Okay. Is that, yeah, it's like I can write it down somewhere in my notes and then, you know, a week later go, where did I write that down at? Crap.
I hear you loud and clear. I feel like my brain's been running on three cylinders lately. Stuff I should have on the tip of my tongue, I have to go dig up and look up. And I tell you, it's...
Well, with me, it's just that I put like 20 irons in fire and I only have time for about five of them. But it's a little technical
yep.
thing there. Hey, my friend, go do your show. I just wanted to touch base with you about that. Also, Vince Finelli, he's on GCN too. USA Prepares, I think is the name of his show. I could think of a bunch of shows for you to go on that would be really good outlets. I mean, because
well,
really, people
you,
need to know this stuff. People don't know that they have a right to say no.
Well, I welcome anybody who wants to and is able and willing to do anything to help me get my information out. You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, growing number of alternative medical doctors and non-medical doctors, you know, chiropractors and so forth, who have expertise on the medical end and getting word out, which is great. You can't have too much of that going on, but there's no one out there as, you know, an attorney really doing the work I'm doing at the level that I'm doing it. So I feel like I have a unique piece of the puzzle. And so I'm always looking for more ways to get that out. So you're always welcome to either send someone to me or email or call me and let me know someone to contact. And, you know, I welcome that and thank you from the bottom of my heart. I love any opportunity I can get to help people, you know, learn more about their rights and understand.
Yeah. Anytime, my friend.
So.
Anyway, do your show and I'll catch you later. Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, Larry.
God bless you, my friend. Later. Bye.
You too. Take care. Well, Yeah, thanks again, Larry. I always appreciate folks. This is a call-in show, by the way, and anyone is welcome to call in with a question or comment, and that call-in number is area code 347-324-3704. That's area code 347-324-3704. And you're welcome to call in with your comment or question about vaccines, vaccine rights, vaccine legal issues. Well, let me move on to one more point here. We're coming in on the break in just a little bit here, but I'm going to try to get going on another point. A good friend of mine sent me an email and was sharing a post that someone had put out, perhaps on a Facebook page or some other place on the Internet. And this, I thought this was really interesting. I wanted to share it with you and discuss it for a little bit. The woman says, "My kid almost died from a vaccine, dot, dot, dot. Sorry, but my kid's more important than yours." It's a really interesting point because the rationale, the reason that you don't get to decide what goes into your body where vaccines are concerned is that the theory is your vaccine protects other people. So, sorry if you don't want to get a vaccine, but you're being, you know, a real louse if you don't get a vaccine because you're not doing your part to protect everybody else. You know, like if you're not vaccinated, your unvaccinated status will somehow magically and mysteriously cause everybody else's vaccines not to work. But the reality is, and the CDC admits this, even if doctors don't, vaccines don't work in everybody. You know, they treat it like if you get a vaccine, you're fine. If you don't get a vaccine, you're going to kill everybody. And that's just not how it works. CDC acknowledges, and this is conservative would be the polite word for these figures. They're lying on the low end. But let's take it at face value for the point. 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't develop immunity. I mean, much higher figures in the medical literature for some vaccines. And so the theory then, well, we've got to vaccinate everybody because not all the vaccines are going to work in all the kids, and there's always a few who, for medical reasons, can't get a vaccine, but everybody else needs to be vaccinated or we won't get this herd immunity and so forth. Well, I had a conversation with an immunologist recently, wonderful, wonderful person, PhD author, Tetiana Obukanic, wrote a wonderful ebook called, I think it's Vaccine Illusion. Look for that. Google that on the Internet. Great book. I highly recommend it, Vaccine Illusion. She basically points out that herd immunity is impossible because you're going to start, first of all, with some percentage of kids who don't even get immunity from the vaccine right away, and then in some of the other kids who do get the desired antibody response from the vaccine, those vaccines will the immunity will wane after a certain number of days, weeks, months, years, whatever it is, the immunity goes down. And some people will have immunity long-term from a vaccine or from the disease, but others won't. And with the exception of the flu vaccine, you're not vaccinating people every year. You go through a series of shots for some period of time and get boosters or whatever, but then you go years without getting a shot. And the immunity wanes. The bottom line is there, herd immunity is a hoax. There's, you just don't ever have a high enough level percentage of people in the population who are immune all at the same time to create herd immunity. And as far back as the 80s, I remember doing research about what was going on in the 1980s. There was a lot of problems with measles outbreaks around the U.S. in the 80s. And there were studies showing outbreaks in highly vaccinated populations, and the CDC documented at least one instance where there was a 100% vaccinated population, and they still had outbreaks. There was a meta study, a study that looked collectively at these studies with the measles problem back in the 1980s, and that meta study concluded that measles, as measles immunization rates rise, measles becomes a disease of vaccinated people. Let me repeat that because it's just crazy. As measles immunization rates rise, measles becomes a disease of vaccinated people. So if we're going to follow the research, we should stop vaccinating, at least not beyond a certain point. But if we assume this notion is true for the sake of this woman's comment, getting back to the post I was talking about a couple minutes ago, that you're going to help protect other people by getting a vaccine, let's assume that's true, even though I think I've just pointed out that it isn't. My kid almost died from a vaccine. Sorry, my kid's more important than yours. And I think the woman really meant that her kid is special and everybody else in the planet's kid is not. What she's really saying there is that as a parent, she's responsible first and foremost to her own children and her own family, and I would support her 110% in that. And I'm responsible first and foremost for my child, my children, and my family, as you are for your family and your kids if you have kids. So it's a little awkward to hear somebody say, sorry, even if it hurts your kids, I got to take care of my kids. And that was sort of the message from the way it was worded there. But I don't really hear it quite that way. I hear it as I've got to take care of my own kids. And, you know, I can't risk my own child's life, even if it is going to, you know, help the rest of the community in some way. Well, I'm going to let this lady off the hook because you know what? It's, you know, I'm glad that you're going to put your children first and take care of your kids because nobody else is going to do that the same way as you are with your children. So they need you. Your kids need you to do that. So I support you in that. But you know what? It's not about whether your kid's more important than someone else because you're not hurting anybody else by saving your kid from death or disability from a vaccine. You're just not doing it. Doctors want you to believe that because they get paid bonuses if they get high vaccination rates. But it's not because there's any real science backing up the position. We're going to go to break here. Actually, a little late for that, but we have flexibility on the show. And if you know me, you know I have trouble stopping talking anyway. But we're listening to Vaccines, Your Rights in the U.S. We're going to go to short break here. We'll be back in just a little bit. And we will be back on the other side of break. Lots more to talk about. So please do stay with us. See you in a couple minutes.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Hi, I have a question for you. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want a company that provides good quality ingredients and does not use artificial sweeteners? Look no further. Genesis Pure has a complete lineup of health and wellness, sports performance, and superfruit juices like Noni and Mangosteen that are pure, wild harvested with no binders and fillers. The philosophy is simple. Cleanse the body of toxins, balance the body's pH and hormones, and build the body nutritionally. Every race has a starting line, and yours is Cleanse, Balance, Build. Sign up for at least a 25% discount and include auto ship of at least one product to start building up 20% back in points for free products. It's a win-win. Help fund our operation while you fund your body nutritionally. Start your journey at genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth. Again, that is genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Okay, we are back live, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., with your host, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Had a question from somebody recently asking me, saying that the person lives and works in New York City and that they heard that it's the toughest state to get a religious exemption for kids, and based on my experience, how difficult is it really? And I have the option of moving to New Jersey. Is that any easier? Essentially saying, you know, where's the place or places to live in the U.S. if you don't want to vaccinate? And I'll tell you, the worst stories that I've heard anecdotally are stories from New York. Now, they are not the only state. Let me back up. Getting a religious exemption, every state's going to have their own procedure, their own exemptions, their own procedure, but 48 states offer religious exemption. And what qualifies for a religious exemption is something that depends on constitutional First Amendment boundaries and not on boundaries that a state wants to invent or decide or determine. So it's really the same boundaries anywhere in the country. The only exception in any significant way being Mississippi, because some 30, 35 years ago, the state Supreme Court in Mississippi, not the U.S. Supreme Court, but the state's highest state court, Mississippi State Supreme Court ruled that vaccine religious exemptions violate the federal constitution. So in Mississippi, religious exemptions are unconstitutional, but not anywhere else in the country. And that's sort of a weird thing, because you might think we have one constitution in the whole country, so everybody should have the same rights under that one constitution, but that's actually not how it works. The rights you have under the constitution depend on what the courts in your jurisdictions have said. So in Mississippi, vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional, but nowhere else in the country. But in any case, in the 48 states that offer religious exemptions, it's arguably the same boundaries in terms of what does and doesn't qualify. So the good news is that as a starting place, it's real simple. There's really only two requirements, and these are quite broad. Your beliefs have to be religious in nature, which is much broader than what most of us think of when we hear the word religion, and we just think about that in common sense terms. So religious in nature, it turns out it doesn't matter. We know this because of federal court decisions. It doesn't matter whether you belong to any religious organization at all. And if you do belong to one, it doesn't matter which one you belong to. It's your personal interpretation of whatever your religion is, if you have one. So really, really broad. The problems with religious exemptions, one of the problems, when they come up is if you have to state your beliefs. Now, in some states, you do, and some you don't. Because when it comes to these specific beliefs, there are some pitfalls there, legal pitfalls. And it just has to do with the fact that the way the law works on that particular point is not consistent with most people's common sense approach. So New York, let me wind my way back to where we started from on this point here. New York is one of those states where you do have to state your beliefs. And in New York, they get to decide whether you qualify. They get to scrutinize your beliefs. And in New York, the individual schools get to do that. Now, this is patently absurd from a common sense point of view, because there's just no way that schools all over the state are going to treat religious exemptions the same way. So there is not going to be – there's just no reasonable way that that can be fairly applied to the person or parent requesting a religious exemption. So there are inherent problems there. And this is sort of interesting because the law, the way it's written, is perfectly valid, but the way it is implemented is problematic if there's ever an instance when two people who have very similar belief statements in different parts of New York and one gets the exemption and one doesn't, for example. Because then you've got tangible evidence the law is not being applied fairly and equally. And that being the case, it would be a violation, arguably, of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. It says the states have to apply their laws fairly and evenly. In any case, certain parts of New York report that the schools are very aggressive in trying to disallow or not allow religious exemptions. So New York can be a difficult place, or certain parts of New York can be difficult for getting religious exemptions. But I think it's really hard to, you know, name individual states for the most part to say, here's a good state or here's a bad state. And the main reason I say that is that the laws are changing all over the country and fairly rapidly in this arena. I know off the top of my head at least five states that have had some kind of change in the law, their state school exemption laws in the last 3 or 4 years, at least two or three others have bills pending that, if the bills pass, will create changes. And the changes have all been in the direction of trying to make it more difficult to get exemptions, trying to discourage exemptions, trying to hold on to or increase their immunization rates. Well, you know, to which I say, either give the exemption or don't. You know, don't give me the exemption and then, you know, slap me on the hand when I say thank you and reach out to take it from you. Here, have an exemption. Thank you. Whack. Make up your mind. Give us the exemption or not. But, and honestly, my professional opinion is that at least three, possibly four of recent years, changes in vaccine exemption laws in at least three or four states. I think three of them, I'm very sure, the wording is unconstitutional. And you might reasonably ask, well, if it's unconstitutional, how can it get passed into law? Well, a law is not officially unconstitutional until a judge says so. You get the issue in front of a court, and you ask the judge to agree with you that it's unconstitutional, and if you convince the judge and the judge issues that ruling, then then the law is officially unconstitutional. So state legislators all over the country take an oath to uphold state and federal constitutions, every one of them. What does that really mean in practice? Well, nothing, because they don't get to decide formally whether or not a law is unconstitutional. Now, I find this very troubling, although the way the system works in this respect is valid as far as it goes. Yes, it should be up to the courts to make that decision, or there would be no constitutional laws. There would always be somebody saying, oh, it's unconstitutional, and then we'd all have to go, okay, start over. But the problem, of course, is that legislators can ignore the issue in a manner that is completely lacking integrity. They can use that as an excuse. Oh, well, it's not up to me, so I'm not going to worry about it. No, it really is up to you. You took an oath. I sat down face-to-face with, thank God, my now former state senator here in North Carolina and pointed out an egregiously unconstitutional law that violates four state and federal statutory provisions and four state and federal constitutional provisions, and she didn't disagree with me about any of those points. She didn't say, well, I don't think you got that right. What she did say was, oh, I can't help you. We have UNC hospitals in our district. So they take the oath, but it doesn't mean anything. They don't care if something's unconstitutional, because we wouldn't want the University of North Carolina hospitals being dissatisfied that we followed the law instead of their self-serving, unlawful. In this case, a law wasn't a bill. This was a law already on the books. It's still on the books. So this is the kind of complete lack of integrity that runs our world today. These are the people in our state and federal legislatures. These are the people in offices, political offices, that decide policy based on whoever has the most clout and not on what the law says or what the science is about. Then they turn around and pretend that it is about the science and the law. Oh, look, we've done this wonderful thing for you. No. You have lied to the people. You have done something to serve yourself and to serve your cronies, your friends, your buddies, to help them have more power unlawfully over the rest of us, to make more money and profit at the expense of the health and safety and rights of the rest of us out in the public. We've got to wake up, folks. We've got to recognize that this is how the system works. Does this mean that everybody in the system is bad all the time? Of course not. The same senator I'm complaining about helped me with another issue that I brought to her. But I'm not going to let her off the hook by saying the system is corrupt, it's not her fault. Because it is her fault when she takes an oath to uphold the Constitution, when I point out that her position is not just flawed on a technicality, but profoundly flawed by multiple state and federal constitutional and statutory conflicts. This was horrible law, and a law that was passed on a false pretense because there was already other constitutional laws on the books that addressed the very issue that they claimed they needed this new law for. So the whole thing was a fraud from the very beginning. It was a hoax. It was perpetrated on us, this particular law allowing children of any age to consent to vaccines and other medical treatment. Children of any age can consent to a treatment that can kill them. Who in their right mind would do that? Only people who had been deceived about what they were doing. These legislators aren't bad people. They were just lied to. They were tricked. They were deceived. But when you bring that to their attention, they ought to say, oh my God, we were deceived. Let's fix that. And that's not what I heard. I'm willing to say this up to the point where she refused to do anything because the local hospital wouldn't like it. I wasn't going to claim any ill will on her part or any wrongdoing because she voted for this bill. She was tricked, like everybody else who voted for it. But once she learned the truth, she should have been all over that. That is somebody who is part of and supporting a dysfunctional system. That is a representative lacking in personal integrity. That is somebody who rationalizes to herself, well, it's not my fault. This is the way the system works. It's only the way it works if that's how you work it. So it's up to me and the rest of us to try and find representatives who want to go in there and do the right thing. But I don't know. We got our work cut out for us. Some of it is about getting the right people in there, but some of it is about the bigger structure of society. You know, where do we get to a place where UNC Hospitals decides what laws are going to be broken and what laws are not going to be broken with, you know, legislation? So those people need to get off their trip too, if assuming that's the case. I mean, I haven't talked with anybody there, so I really can't speak for their position, but assuming the senator had some basis for her position, then there's clearly a incestuous relationship between UNC hospitals and the state legislature, because if they can get a bill passed into law that is so egregiously unlawful merely because they have some sort of clout or connection or whatever, then that's a dysfunctional system. And that is some people lacking in integrity. These are polite phrases and words for it, because what I really want to say, I don't dare say on the air about it. Okay, I've gotten way off on a tangent here. Let me reel myself back in. My webpage came up during the last break that was not up beginning the show, and I wanted to talk about one or two articles. We still have a few minutes left here. Here's one from the Progressive Radio Network. The web address, P as in progressive, PRN.FM. The whooping cough epidemic, a failed vaccine causes a public health crisis. Interestingly, I suppose this is, in a sense, another example of the same general concept I was talking about. The pertussis, which is the whooping cough, as it's informally known, pertussis vaccine, this article is a failure and has now become a public health crisis. Well, some of us know this and some of us don't, because the media, mainstream media, lies about this all the time, as do, I don't know if I can call all doctors liars, because some of them believe what they're saying. I think if you believe what you're saying, you're not technically lying. You're just telling a mistruth or misinformed or whatever. But anyway, bad information all the time about this. Of course, mainstream media not reporting on this. You got to look outside of the U.S. at certain local affiliates around the U.S. to get this news, according to the article. And this story here covered from a local news station in Sacramento, talking about how an 18-month-old girl got whooping cough from a hospital employee who was fully vaccinated for pertussis. just a normal trip to the hospital. The 18-year-old come down with a mild virus. They took her to Kaiser Permanente in South Sacramento back in April. The little girl got sicker and sicker. They went back to Kaiser in May, and she was coughing uncontrollably, had difficulty breathing. And test results showed that she had pertussis. So that's scary for a little kid, because it's the little kids, the very, very young and the elderly, that are most susceptible to having serious complications or dying from these child infectious diseases. Now, a few decades ago, kids would get pertussis at an older age when they could handle it, recover from it, and mothers would have those antibodies, would pass those on through breast milk to infants, and the infants have protection, and an 18-month-old wouldn't be getting pertussis. But now that we've used vaccines, which the immunity, if you get it at all from a vaccine, wears off. It's not the same immunity as the wild disease. So mothers don't have antibodies anymore to pass on to their infants, and a lot of them aren't breastfeeding even if they did have it. So vaccines have created a condition where there's more of a problem rather than less of a problem. It's a really unfortunate situation there. You know, I am watching the clock tick down here. I've really gone past the point where I usually begin playing the exit music. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up here. You'll be listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips from Asheville, North Carolina. I'm going to start the song. Let me see if I can find it here. First of all, a long list of audio files, and the computer responds slowly sometimes. There we go. So the song will cut short before the end of the song, so the next show can get started on time. But thank you so much for listening. See you next time around. You've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., and this song is called Destiny Freedom, written, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Enjoy.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the sin screams louder than the finest ever there. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage